This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
Craving the coffee flavor you love, but without the caffeine? Kachava's got you covered with their newest coffee flavor. This all-in-one nutrition shake delivers bold, authentic flavor crafted from premium decaffeinated Brazilian beans. Quality nutrition shouldn't be complicated. Just two scoops of Kachava's all-in-one nutrition shake and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Whether you're craving that coffee taste to kickstart your morning ritual or as a nutrient-packed reward to round out your afternoon, Kachava keeps you fueled and satisfied wherever your day takes you. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. And for the times you feel like switching it up, you've got 7 flavors to choose from, all with the highest quality ingredients. Treat yourself to the flavor and nutrition your body craves. Go to kachava.com and use code FITNESS. New customers get 15% off their first order. That's kachava.com, code FITNESS.
We do this too, we're bringing that fire. Talking real talk, Kentucky's on fire. From bourbon to ball games, we got that flow. On the We Do This Too podcast, yeah, you know. From country roads to the city lights, they bring the heat, man, every night. We do this too, let's make it clear. If you ain't listening, you ain't here.
Welcome back, y'all, to another episode of the We Do This Too Outdoors podcast. As always, this show is proudly brought to you in partnership with brands we truly believe represent the very best the outdoor industry has to offer. Before we get started, we want to give a huge shout out to Moultrie, Ula's Archery, Threads Custom Bowstrings, G5 Outdoors, Blackburn Apparel Company, Deer Pimp Scents and Lures, Vision Clothing, Bluebird Waterfowl Company, Angry Chicken Outdoors, Briley's in Houston, Texas, and last but not least, the good folks over at Retail USA. Thank you for making us feel like family and for building some of the best shotguns on the market. From trail camera to elevate your scouting experience, to shotguns, archery setups, apparel, and scent control, these are the brands we trust, brands we use, and brands we're proud to stand behind. I also want to send a heartfelt thank you to everyone who supports the podcast. Whether you've been here since day one or you're just tuning in, your support means the world to us. With that being said, let's dive into another episode of the We Do This Too Outdoors podcast with your boy, C-Wheel.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another edition of the We Do This Too Outdoors podcast. I'm your host, Courtney Williamson. I've got the man, the myth, the legend, the master of turkeys himself, Mr. Stanley Williams on today, man. He's going to tell us a little bit about how he got started in the outdoors and hopefully give us a little bit of a turkey hunting strategy and a little bit of a turkey masterclass. I know here in Kentucky, we're about to get started. I know a lot of states are open up right now already, but for the folks who hadn't been out in the woods just yet, you know, maybe this will give them something to work on before they get out in the woods. Mr. Williams, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing good this afternoon, man. Just tired from chasing birds today, but you know what? Hey, you know, we made it another good day.
That's right, man. So for the folks who don't know Mr. Stanley, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I just been a turkey hunter, deer hunter my whole life. I was taught by my father, my uncles. You know, I cut my teeth on rabbit hunting and toting rabbits before I was even have a gun to even shoot at a rabbit. But eventually I got to that and then was able to start shooting my own 20 gauge at rabbits, and then the deer hunting started. And you know, sitting in the deer stand with my dad, learned how to scout, just, man, with my uncles and they hunting club, and then they just revolved and I fell in love with it.
I heard that. Yeah, my pops got me introduced to it, and he was a big rabbit hunter. He grew up right there in Somerville, Tennessee, right outside of Memphis. So we kind of got similar stories there, you know, watching him run behind them dogs and, you know, cutting my rabbit hunting too, man. It was one of the things, man. I look back on it, man. I miss it, you know.
Well, yeah, we all miss it, man. I mean, I don't get to go rabbit hunting like I used to, but you know, when I do ever get a chance to go, I'll go. But right now, with me and the turkey stuff, you know, come January, we got the Unicorn Call Maker show, then we got calling contests going in the month of January, then we right to February, then we at Nashville. So, you know, it just one thing, man, after another, we just go with the competition calling and the call building and the hunting and everything, man. Just one big family and we all, you know, get with it.
That's right.
But I'll go back to myself as, you know, over the years I've hunted, me and my high school buddies, we all grew up right there hunting together. My father and their fathers were friends. They all had a hunt club called the B&W Hunt Club. And so we all kind of cut our teeth hunting together, doing stuff together. And, you know, we started kind of pushing one another about turkey hunting and stuff. So, and we all hunted. And it would be our turkey hunt. And once I got me a turkey, me and my dad would be fishing. And then it got to the point where I wanted to get two turkeys instead of one turkey. And then it became a passion. And then, you know, for a while that thing slowed down for me, well, you know, with life. And then I started building calls and it just resonated from building one call. Somebody liked to build another call. Somebody liked to build another call. Somebody liked, and they say, you know, here I am.
Yeah. So what your first turkey hunt, what was that? I'm guessing when you was a kid with your dad.
Nope. My first turkey hunt was by myself.
By yourself.
And I was hunting with a Bentley box call. I told my dad I want to get into turkey hunting. And he just looked at me and said, oh, just you know how dads do.
Yeah.
He came home work the next day and had me a Bentley box call. I didn't, you know, and back then, you know, you thinking to get a turkey to answer you, you got to gobble. I didn't know about all the yelping and all this stuff. Nobody told me nothing. So I went down to the woods and just took the box and went, yelp, 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 listen. And turkey gobble. Yelp, yelp, yelp. And sit there and they say, no, look, man, here come a whole drove of turkeys. Boom, I killed one. And it just did that, man. It just lit a fire and it's been on ever since.
Yeah. So pretty much right after that hunt, it clicked in your head that you was like, man, this is something that, you know, I just don't like, but I love.
Well, I ain't gonna say that I was that in love with it. I liked it because I had control of what I was doing. And so, you know, and then, you know, as I got older, you go into the woods doing that, and then I wouldn't have no success. Wouldn't have no love. Like, what's the world going on? And then finally I started getting a few tips and tricks from one of my buddies. His father-in-law wasn't his father-in-law, but it became his father-in-law. He was a pretty good turkey hunter. So he started kind of giving us little trips, little tips and stuff, you know, but back in the day, them old timers wouldn't tell you nothing. And so finally, we scuffed it for a while, but we finally figured it out. And I pushed it to another level because when I got bit by that bug, I took off with it.
That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, I guess anything in life, I guess if we get bit by that bug, like it was me for duck hunting about a few years ago, you know, I got bit by that bug and, you know, something that I'll never see myself ever not doing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And see, in that duck hunting thing, that's not me. I ain't never been big on duck hunting. I tried to calm too, but it just ain't my cup of tea.
Yeah, some people like it, some people don't, man. I've heard of a lot of people that don't like it, you know, and I'm one of them people for a long time.
Well, but think about it, here in Georgia, I mean, you ain't really got any good places to do any duck hunting in Georgia. You know, if you get on, but y'all mean you're going to get on a few little woodies and it's 15 minutes is over with.
Right.
Yeah. And that's what I did. I went and got on a hunt and three woodies came in. I killed two out of the three.
Mm-hmm. And it was over.
It was over.
Yeah.
And so.
I understand.
But, you know. Maybe one day I go get one where I go be on one of them hunts. Of course, they call it a blackout.
Yeah.
And then it might, but if it happens, if it's more addictive than turkey hunt, then I don't need it.
It can be, man. You know, I've been hunting turkeys a lot longer than I have duck hunting, but I'm one of them guys, man, whatever season it is, I'm out there doing it, you know. Love turkey hunting most, but, you know, just like the next man, but when it comes down to it, if somebody asks me, you know, what animal I would want to hunt for the rest of my life, and if I could only hunt one, it'd be deer for me. But everybody's different.
Well, I would say if it was one animal that I could only hunt for the rest of my life, I would choose deer. As much as I love turkey hunting, but I would choose deer because deer is going to be here. But if we keep doing what we're doing, the turkey population and destroying the habitat, there's not going to be no more turkeys.
Yeah.
Because we as humans, man, woman, we're doing the damage because we're taking away everything that the turkeys need. We're taking away the habitat. And we can't keep doing that. You can't turn a 1,000-acre prestige piece of property, go in and clear cut it, and that's nothing but a briar patch. You know, turkeys can't survive. They got to go somewhere to survive. Yeah. You're taking all the big habitat away from them.
Yeah, I was having that conversation with a buddy of mine the other day. He was saying, you know, the deer population is going to be here, but if we keep doing like you said, what we're doing, you know, with turkeys, he said, ain't going to be no turkeys to hunt because, you know, we're killing off, you know, their habitat. And then you've got, you know, predators, apes, and, you know, bobcats and coyotes doing damage along with the humans. So he's like, ain't going to be no turkeys to hunt if we keep on.
Well, you know, and we as humans, the biggest predator.
Yes, which is really crazy.
The biggest predator. I mean, you know, if you do the math, just say for instance, if there's 100,000, just say 100,000. No, let's not even go there. Let's just say 50,000 people. 50,000 in every state harvest a turkey. One turkey. In every state. Do the number. Then you look at everybody that comes from out of state and kill a turkey. Do the math.
Yeah. Yeah. You got a point. Because, I mean, if you look at just the out of state numbers and then you know, go with the people that actually live in state, you mm-hmm. know, it's. That's mind-blowing.
All right, and then you throw in those renegade hunters that were hunting their home state, and their home state eliminate two, but they killing 6 to 7 that never get reported.
Yeah. Yeah, I think about that, you know. Yeah.
People never, you know. So if you had, if there was no coyotes, if we got rid of the snakes, the bobcats, and the turkeys had no other predators besides man, and with the man destroying the habitat, and we killing turkeys like we do every year, and people going to state to state to state to state to state, that's wreaking havoc on the turkey populace.
Yeah, big time.
And you know when, and then when he hatch off of popes. I mean, and they a certain age, man. If it's raining, they'll look straight up at the sky, look at the rain, and the raindrops hit them in their nostrils and drown them and kill them.
Because they're
so curious where the raindrop is.
Right.
And they could lose their life by getting drowned.
Which is crazy. Like, you just don't think that happens, you know, but it does.
Yes. But then you look at if them popes going across the driveway, going across a dirt road, if a crow sees them, that crow will swoop down and get it. If a hawk sees it, a hawk will swoop down and get it. A hoot owl will swoop down and get it. So, man, they got so many adversities. Even when they get hatched out of the egg, you got the fire ants getting on them. So the turkey got so much disadvantages against them the first month of their life. Most popes don't make it past the first 5 days.
Yeah, I was reading something, you know, most popes don't make it between anywhere from 4 to 7 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just crazy to think about, man, but it's true.
Yes. Oh, yes. Exactly right. You 100% right. But man, you know, on the competition side of things, it's intriguing. But we as competition callers, we don't, what we do on stage, we don't do in the woods. Mm-hmm. Which I don't. Only thing I do is I change my calling style and I do what the turkeys want to hear.
Yeah, but I'm glad you said that because I was having a conversation with a buddy of mine last year who he does a little bit of duck calling and competition calling, and he's like, what you hear me do on stage, I will never, never do in the woods. He said, I'm doing that on stage for a show. He said, because most ducks that you hear, you know, when I'm sitting there just yanking on that call, whack, 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 ducks don't do that.
No, they do not.
So, you know, the same thing, I'm guessing, in the turkey world, you know, when you're competition calling, you're doing that basically for the judges to put on a show.
Exactly. And we want to keep it clean. It's like an orchestra, you know, it's music. You want to make sure that song flows and you want to make sure it's clean. You don't have no mistakes. And you catch the judge's ear and you get scored well. If you don't catch his ear and he don't like what you're doing, you know, it is going to be, but think about it. It's all opinionated anyway. It's mm-hmm. one man's opinion. So you got 7 judges. You got 7 men's judging you, and they all have their own opinion about what you sounded like, how you sounded. You know what I'm saying?
Right, yeah.
When you're listening for if a man can sound turkey, guess what? Anybody can take a turkey call and make a turkey sound.
Right, yeah.
But putting it together is another thing.
So what would you say separates a competition caller from, you know, your regular hunter. What mistakes do you think like a normal caller makes in the woods compared to like a competition caller? Like if some guy just, you know, today turned on one of your videos on YouTube, sees you calling, they're going to try to mimic that out in the outdoors.
Yes. That's the biggest thing about it. When I say this, myself, there's so many competition callers. Matt Van Sykes, Dave Owens, Jesse Martin, Lane Webb, Bruce Solly, Scott Ellis, Jason Conrad, Zach Conway, Jason Brown, all of us guys, man. I can go down the list of competition callers that when people hear them call, oh man, I want to sound like that. That's what we do on stage. But when we hit the woods, it's a whole different animal.
But I guess my question would be, especially for like a newbie, you know, if they see you calling on stage, you know, they say, hey, I want to sound like him out in the woods. Like, my question would be to them, you know, to you, I guess, what would you have them do other than watch what you're doing on competition? Would you have them listen to turkeys? Would you have them listen to like another person? Because, you know, some people, they mimic everything they see. So if they see you on stage doing that, they're going to try to want to do that in the woods. And they're making a big mistake. So, like, what would you tell like a beginner caller, like, to do?
I would tell a beginner caller, get a call that's very user-friendly, that is forgiveness, and I would listen to real turkeys, and I would copy what real turkeys do. Because real turkeys, have you ever been in the woods and heard a hen yelping and you go, man, that sounds like a person? And when she comes up there walking in front of you, it's a real hen. You ever heard that in the woods before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. But compare her to what we do on stage.
Yeah, it's amplified.
Yes. So when you heard that real turkey sound that bad, and if you had to score that turkey, how would you score that turkey? Would you just score that turkey good, or would you score that turkey bad?
Probably bad.
But why? It was a real turkey.
Yeah, but it's not.
It don't matter. It's a real turkey.
Yeah, you're right. But I get what you're saying. But like,
how can you say if it's a real live turkey, how can you say that turkey is doing it wrong? How can you say she's doing it wrong?
You can't. I mean, that's
exactly right. You can't. So that's when it becomes very objective and opinionated. Because right now you have a turkey yelp in your mind that you want to sound like. Am I right?
Right.
And I don't care what I say. If I'm running the call and if I sound like that hen that you like in your head, you're going to score me good because you like that hen.
Right.
But if I don't sound like the hen that you really like, then I got to really do that call very well to persuade you to give me a good score.
Yeah, it's... Now as you put it that way, like you said, it's all opinionated.
Yes.
Because if I'm thinking of what my hen sounds like, and then the judge next to me has an idea of what his sounds like, and my, you know, the way you're calling doesn't sound like the way I'm imagining, it's like, oh, he's terrible. You know, that don't sound like, you know, I'm thinking of, you know.
That's right. And then you got seven judges. listening to you call. And so they going, okay. So you got seven judges critiquing you. So it's tough. And I've sat behind that curtain and judged. You sit behind that curtain and you judge 25 or 30 callers. And you listening to that many callers and everybody yuppie. It starts running together. You start like, good gosh. Yes, I sit behind the curtain and judge. It's tough.
I'll guarantee it.
But yeah, it's tough.
So what made you want to be to get on stage and be a competition caller?
I wanted to. Well, it's kind of weird. I figured if I start being a competition caller, more people would know about Black Lightning Game Calls, and it would try to help me, do more. Then, and me being playing sports my whole life, being competitive, and I started the competition calling. If you're a competitor, you don't like losing.
Right.
And then when you lose and you beat yourself, I know I can do better than this. And it just, and I started just pushing. But then along the way, I had a lot of good people that helped me. I mean, Richard Gunn was the first one to help me. Mr. Joe Drake, the Moth Hustle, Terry Rome, Terry Phillips, Don Shipp, Parrish Elliott, Salah McGraw. Man, it's so many of you guys on the calling circuit. Bobby Woods has offered so much help to me. And, and when they hear you calling, they'll critique you and tell you what sounds good, what sounds bad. And so that's what I'm saying, man. And it started, man. And when you get the right people in your corner that work with you, help you, and give you a true friendship, man, it means something.
For sure, yeah. So you started calling to try to get those Black Lightning calls, try to get some sold and, try to get your name out there or whatever.
Yes, exactly. And then next thing you know, man, but I just wasn't satisfied being back of the pack. And then kept on chopping. And next thing you know, boom, I get qualified to go to Nashville. And when I first got qualified, I didn't go to Nashville because I didn't feel that I finished third place and the two guys in front of me was already qualified. So they said, Stanley, you qualified to go to Nashville. In my mind, I didn't win it. I'm not qualified to be there. So I kept on. The next year, I had a awesome contest in Claxton, Georgia, and I finished second. But when I finished second and some of the people that was in that contest, when I finished second, I felt that I earned that spot. So then I went to Nashville. And when I got to Nashville, it was a rude awakening. I mean, and when I say rude awakening, it's like when you go to Nashville, you walk in Nashville, you got guys coming out, they got their callbacks and everything. You got somebody rolling out with a Pinto. You got somebody running out with a Corvette. You got somebody running out with a Lamborghini. And that's where them calls are. You can't go in there running no. You can't go in there running no Pinto calls and no Corvette calls. You got to have some Lamborghini calls on that Grand National stage.
Yeah,
you got to have someone get it.
How do you pick out which call that you're going to use on stage?
I try to find the call that is the most user-friendly call. But now I'm looking for that call that got that true turkey in it. And you find a call got that true turkey. And it's user-friendly, easy. Because, you know, once you get on stage, your nerves get going, you tense up, you tighten up. You want something when you tense up, tighten up, it still got that unk to it. It don't want to go south on you. You know what I mean? And that's when you can start really doing your thing where they are. Good pot call, good box call, including mouth call, man. The same thing.
Yeah.
Same thing, man. So it's just how we all do it, man. And everybody got their own little twerks, little twist. We all got our little secret sauce, little secret weapon that we think. But you know, at the end of the day, you put it in the hands of the judges, and you better hope the judges is feeling you that day. And Bobby Woods told me one thing: is stay true to me. He said, "You're gonna win some. You should have lost." You're going to lose some, you should have won. And that stuck with me because I've been to contests and I know other people have been to contests. And I've heard them call and I go, man, they just won this contest and they don't even place. I've had some tell me, man, you won this contest. You didn't even place. I mean, I called the contest in Alabama. But when I got finished, Eddie saw to himself. My brother Bruce, Sally, a lot of them guys said, man, you done won this contest, man. You outcalled all of us. I didn't even place. So, you know. And then I went to contest four and I've had little ships and bobbles. And I go, man, I'm not in this one. I'm done. And place. Or win it. So, I don't know, man.
That seems like it would be, well, as a guy that played sports all his life as well, you know, and super competitive, don't like losing, you know, you feel like the day that you feel like, you know, everything's working for you, everything's sounding good, you don't place. And then the days that you feel like you're sounding like awful or terrible, you end up placing or, you know, whatever. But you're still having to go against these judges who are critiquing you and whatever. And half of these judges can't call nowhere near as good as, you know, as some of these guys that are on stage. It's like, go back in your head. It's just like, so why are these guys critiquing me on what I'm doing?
Well, but some of the judges. No, but some of these judges that we got are world champion callers. They've been world champions before. They just behind that panel, you know? And,
I got you.
I don't know what happened, man.
You froze on me, but you good.
Okay. But no, man, some of those judges, some of them judges, man, are world champion callers, grand national callers, you know, done won U.S. Opens, all kind of major contests. But the thing about it is, we all have our own turkey in our ear. So that's where it becomes all opinionated. But, you know, I can sit up under that curtain. I've been around the calling circuit long enough, though. I can sit up under that curtain. And I know for a fact, I can tell you, if I look and see who's in that contest, I guarantee you I can pick out some of the callers and I can be behind it because you never see them. But I can pick them out because I know their calling style. Just like some of them know my calling style. I mean, hands down.
Right.
You can put 20 guys in a contest and are we still connected?
Yeah, you good. I can still hear you.
And you can put 20 callers in a contest. And I guarantee you, if they put the Kiki run in that contest, I could bet you money a judge would pick me out and say, that's Stanley.
So your Kiki run is, they can pick you out from 20 other colors.
Yes, it's different. My Kiki run is different. I run on a Kiki disc. There's a few other guys run on a Kiki disc, but my Kiki is different. It has that little hint to it, and people know it. I mean, when I done that Kiki on the Southern Boys Outdoors, had you seen the remarks and comments and stuff that I got on that Kiki?
Yeah, I was sitting there looking at all the comments, and I'm like, dude, this man sounds like I've never heard it done that way, for one, because everybody that I learned from growing up, you know, they did it for, you know, 7 to 10, 15 seconds. They did it real, real long. And then when you were showing this, you said, that's how a real turkey sounds in the woods. You know, when you were saying, I listen to real turkeys, and this is how they do it. Everybody's Kiki run is too long. This is how short it needs to be. And I was like, that makes a lot of sense.
Yep. And honestly, truthfully, I think I gave away too much information on that.
Yeah, you probably did, but at the same time, you know, it was one of those things, like, you know, just a little piece of the game that you gave away. I don't think it's going, you know, you're just helping some other hunters out there. You know?
Well, it's like this right here. The Kiki is not the only call in the contest. So there's three other calls or four other calls that you got to do. But at the end of the day, you still got to beat me. And right. I'm going to give them all they need if they're going to beat me.
Yeah.
I just keep doing what I'm doing.
So speaking of, you know, the Kiki run, like when, if you can answer this, you don't have to answer it if you don't want to. Like, when in the woods would you use that?
It just depends on. It's not a certain time I'm going to use it right here. It's just when you interacting with birds, you know, give them something a little bit different. Throw something at them different. You know, everybody want to do the plain yelp, but they want to be cutting. They want to do exciting yelping. You know, sometimes. Throw something a little different at
them. Yeah, just something to throw a little something different.
Yeah, I mean, you could be yelping, yelp, yelp, yelp. Then I was going to throw a kick in there. Beep, 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 yelp, yelp, yelp. You change the game by doing that. You change the game by doing that. And that's what so many people, they are afraid to throw something different in there because they think they're messing up. No, give it a try. I mean, if you listen to turkeys making all kinds of sounds every day.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching, after talking to you, I got on YouTube and just typed in, you know, like turkey sounds, and there's this guy that popped up. I can't remember his name, but like he literally watches turkeys for a living, videos them and like interacts with them and whatever. Like
Mr. Denny Govers.
Yes, sir. Yeah, that's him.
I knew exactly who you're talking about.
And then like some of those sounds I had never heard before, you know, and like, you know, most hunters need to watch these because you actually see what these turkeys, the sounds these turkeys are making. And you can mimic those when you get in the wood.
Exactly. Turkeys make so many sounds, it's unreal. Listening to them in my yard is unreal.
Yeah, man.
It's unreal.
So what's what's one thing in your mind that you think that most hunters think they know about turkeys, but they really don't?
I think most people think, and now this is just my observation, most people think that if you go by this person call, that person call, it's going to make you a better hunter. If you got this call, you got this, it's going to make you better. When that turkey's right, you can do everything wrong and it works out. And I was telling everybody, don't limit yourself to new things in the turkey wood.
Don't limit yourself to anything in the turkey.
Okay, Art, if you got a Black Lightning call in your bag, if you got a David Hollis call in your bag, if you got a Woodhaven call in your bag, okay, you can say, hey, you got a Houndstooth call, and you can say, Stanley, I'm going to run your Black Lightning. You hitting that Black Lightning call ain't nothing. You can't get nothing. But you reach in your bag and pull out that Houndstooth call and you hit it, nothing. You reach in there and pull out your other call, who are AJ Strutt, whatever. And you hit it and that turkey gobble to it. You go, whoa, he got. Was it the other two calls, three calls you ran before? Or was it something about that call, that bird, like?
I ran into that before, man. So, and I always felt like the, you know, say the two calls that I was running that they didn't, you know, respond to, and I picked up that third one, I thought maybe I was just not, I wasn't hitting the calls right. I was hitting like a bad note, if it makes sense.
No, well, I'm gonna say it to you like this right here. Turkey call vocabulary is what you call an encryptment, right? What two people can call you right now in your voice and their voice will resonate with you right now? If they called your name, you'll perk up.
My mama and my daddy, I guess.
Guess why? Guess why? From the time you came into this world, for 8 months, you heard your mother's voice every day, didn't you? While you was inside her stomach, that voice is imprinted on you, right? All right, then you got older, your dad started talking to you. That voice got imprinted on you. You can be in a room with 50 people in there. I guarantee you, your mama can walk in there and call your name, and you know that's your mama.
Yep.
So think about this. If that hen is a raspy, yelping hen, and she sat on that cluster of eggs the whole time she was yelping, they heard a raspy yelping, didn't they?
Yep.
So when that bird, you in the woods hunting that bird, and you yelping with a clear yelp, but he don't respond, you go to a clear note on the front, little rasp on the back, he don't understand, and you go all rasp, and he respond to you. You go, wow. So now, how will you call that bird from then on? Would you call clear? Would you call clear raspy or would you call all raspy?
Whichever she responded to. So I guess it'd be the raspy one, right?
Exactly. Cause guess what? That's what's imprinted on him. He has a raspy. So if you go in the woods and you yelping with a clear yelp and the turkey's jumping all over, gobbling it, You keep a clear yoke. If he got a clear dome on the front, rasp in the back, that's what you run to that turkey. If it's all rasp, that's what you run to that turkey.
Makes sense, man.
Yeah.
I never thought of it like it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right.
Yeah, like you said, I got a room full of people. You know, 100 people, 1,000 people in there, and my mama walks in there and says my name. I know who that is. You know your mama's voice. You know your daddy's voice. You know,
mm-hmm. Exactly right. That's exactly right. With so many people.
Let's talk about types of calls. You know, like box calls, slate calls, diaphragms, like. What made you pick up, I guess, what made you want to, you know, I guess, black lighting? Do y'all make just the slate calls, or do y'all make box or diaphragms? Do y'all make them all?
No, I do box calls. I do slates. I do ceramic. I do glass. I do crystal. I got some copper. I got some aluminum. I got gray aluminum, black anodized, green. I got regular slate, red slate, green slate, purple slate. I put in walnut pots, cherry wood pots, mahogany pots, walnut pots, zebra wood pots, Osage pots, Ambrosia maple pots. So, yeah, different flavors, man.
Yeah. Different flavors. So I think that, you know, especially for a new age hunter, you know, getting out there and wanting to harvest his first turkey, you know, they go to their big box store and, you know, they've got slate calls in front of them. They got box calls. They got diaphragms, all different companies, all different names. Like, you know, what would you recommend for like a person just starting out trying to harvest their first turkey? Like, what would you suggest that they go with?
Me, myself, I would tell anybody that just getting into turkey hunting, wanting to start line turkey hunting, I would tell them, go find them the, I don't know what somebody's financial situation like. I have no idea. But they can go get and invest in them in a good slate call and good striker. And for a mouth call, I would go find me a nice straight double reed call. Learn how to run those calls before I start trying to add more on my job, you know, to get it done. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you have to, and when I say job, and when I make the statement job, okay, it's a job picking out good calls, good strikers. It's a job.
Yeah. I'd say, you know, because I mean, you got to find that right one that, you know, is talking turkey to you. You know what I'm saying?
You're trying to find that call that gives you that hand that you got in your head.
You got to get that. It makes sense, though, because, you know, I went into some, you know, some woods before, man. You know, I just picked up the cheapest call that I could find, and I'm just not having no luck, man. And then go with a couple of buddies. They got some higher end calls, and they're switching calls left and right out of their vest. They finally find that one, and I'm just like, okay, this makes sense why so many turkey hunters carry so many calls. You know, they got to find that one that's hitting. And once they find it, you know, it's game on then.
But now what I do is I'll find that one good call. And then I try to find four or five different strikers to run on that one call.
Okay.
Because Because the striker's a lot lighter to tote in your vest than it is a bunch of calls.
Yeah, it sure is. Yeah, it sure is. Man, so, all them strikers are going to make a different call.
Right.
So.
Exactly. You're exactly right. And us competition callers, we know, you know, so we know what we have to do and take it to the woods, basics.
It makes sense. So, like, I guess when you go to the woods, let's just say what we're talking about right now is just for newbie callers. You know, you got some guys are going there blind calling. I mean, they're letting that thing yelp, you know, super loud. Then you got some guys that go in there that are yelping not loud enough. They're calling too much, and some people are not calling enough. Like, when do you know when to call higher pitched, and when do you call like lower pitch? Like, what's your strategy for that?
I don't like to get high pitch on calls. I like to start off soft and get to a nice middle monotone. Because if you think about this, and I'll kind of give you a scenario. If you're sitting in a room, someone come in and start yelling and screaming, 9 out of 10, you're going to tell them to shut up or you're going to get up and walk out, right? So if you run into a turkey and you yelping loud, he's not used to that loud yelping. Because when turkeys is communicating in the woods, do you hear them yelping loud? Sometimes you bad can't hear them yelping, can you?
Sometimes you barely can't hear them.
With all the stretching in the leaves, walking in the leaves, you can hardly hear them. So why would you want to call loud, loud, loud? Turkey, no, that's not real. Turkey's going to get away from you.
That makes sense. That makes sense, man. I'm telling you, man. Taking us to school today, man. So in your mind, you know, we're going to change, you know, switch it up just a little bit from turkey hunting. From, you know, when you got into the outdoor industry, you know, as an African-American caller, African-American hunter, like, do you feel like the industry is changing? Like when you first started, you know, getting in it up until now?
Well, people need to realize this. Everything changes every day. It changes every day. Nothing stays the same. Everything changes. But you have to put yourself in a position to grow. And if you put yourself in a position to grow, whether the system, industry, however you want to call it, accept you, be true to yourself. Be humble. Enjoy what you can enjoy. Control what you can control. Don't sweat the small stuff, because it's all small stuff. And you'll be all right. It'll be fine. Because the industry is what it is. It's an industry. It's no different than basketball, football, or any other professional sport, right? So how can you say the industry not doing me fair, not doing me right? It's vicious out there. You just have to stay true to yourself. And, you know, build friendships.
Right.
And then the industry will be what it's going to be. The industry.
That's right. So, you know, getting to the end of us here, man, I appreciate you coming on, but, like, what advice would you give some up and coming, you know, turkey hunters or hunters, period, you know, coming up in this industry that want to get started and kind of take the path that you took?
First of all, I tell them, stay true to itself, be honest, build friendships. And if you want to be a part, you either can be someone that has a product, you can be someone that supports a product, but you have to have something to give back, whether it's your time, a call, your effort. It's always something that you got to give back. Because this day and time, you got to give to get. And most people will give, but there's a lot more takers out there than there are givers. So you just have to stay true to yourself. And if you friend somebody up, you be their friend. Don't be their friend because they got this. You be their friends because you want to hang around them and be with them.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. Because I feel like a lot of people nowadays, they want to get around somebody that's in the position that they want to be in, and they're befriending them, but just because they want to be in that position, if that makes sense.
Yes. Oh, yes. A lot of people will friend you up just because they want to say, oh, that's my friend, that's my buddy. It's wild.
Yeah. See, this cutthroat out here. It really is. But like you said, just stay true to yourself, you know, befriend people and just, you know, do the best you can, man. And, you know, you'll make it happen.
I mean, you know, and you think about it, man. I mean, in 2024, you know, I had a heart attack. And, you know, I'm still here.
Right.
God has a plan for me. So whatever his plan is, it'll be what it's going to be.
That's right. Yeah. He wasn't through with you yet, man. You still got plans. He still got plans for you here, man. He was like, it ain't your time yet. Get back out there.
Exactly. So, man, that's what, but I'll tell anybody, if you can find something that you love to do, if you can do it respectfully and make money, make friendships, do it.
Right. Yeah.
Life ain't promised to you.
Joe ain't here today, gone tomorrow.
Yep. That's exactly right. That's right. You know, but man, I've been blessed, man. I've had a great time with the calling, with the deer hunting, the turkey hunting. And, you know, if I never kill another deer, if I never kill another turkey, I'm okay with that. Because I've had an opportunity to kill some of the best deer, some of the best turkey, rabbit hunt. I've been around some of the best when it comes to doing that. So I have no regret. I have no regrets. None.
That's good to hear, man. Yeah. Well, I'm glad I had a chance to meet you last year at the NWTF. You know,
well, you're nice meeting you in the family too, man.
Proud to call you my friend. And,
yes, likewise.
You know, I'm just like you said, man, I'm always rooting for you. You know, keep doing what you're doing, and you know, Black Lightning will be around here forever, man. Just keep doing what you're doing.
Well, we got to root for each other, man. We got to root for each other and support each other.
Right.
You know, everybody want to be, oh, today's my day. But today is not your day. It don't mean you can't still keep supporting somebody because it's their day.
Right. Amen.
And that's what happened, you know. You know, when one sees somebody getting a little bit better, oh, he think he better than me because he doing this. No. He just doing what he do.
Yep. You know what he do?
That's it.
Well, Mr. Stanley, man, I appreciate you hopping on here, man. I know you've been chasing them turkeys and got a busy schedule. I know you probably wore out, so.
Yes, I am. I am wore out, man. But, you know, got to keep going. Got to keep going.
Yeah, I appreciate you, man. And like I said, anything I could ever do for you, let me know. And, you know, if I can do it, I'll do it for you, man. But, you know, appreciate you coming on the podcast. Hopefully, you know, you said something that somebody will, you know, run away with. You was preaching there for about an hour there. So,
yeah. So, I mean, so. Like I said, man, I'm tired. And like I say, this podcast may not went the best and not went the greatest. But, hey, if we do it again, we'll do it.
Hey, man. You always welcome on my platform anytime you want to come, man. So
we'll make it happen, man. And, you know, we stay prayed up and stay blessed. That's what we can do.
Yes, sir.
And tell my little brother, I said, keep yupping.
I will. Will do. I think he's in there now. I can kind of hear him a little bit. So.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Well, keep yupping.
You, man.
All right. You too, man. Thank you.
Yes, sir. And if that's it, man, Mr. Stanley Williams, we do this too outdoors podcast. Big game, small game, all game. We do this too.
That's right. And like I say, one thing about it, Black Lightning came call, strike it, he will come.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yep.